Thank you very much. I'm Sonia Vega Lopez. I'm an assistant professor in nutrition at Arizona State University. And I think the work that I'm going to present today is going to give you a clear example of how one can broaden the picture of how you're looking at research. I was trained as a nutritional biochemist focusing on cardiovascular disease metabolism, lipoprotein and cholesterol metabolism, but realized that the Hispanic community needs a lot of support in actually being able to prevent chronic diseases. That's perhaps more important than waiting for somebody to now have high cholesterol or hypertension and hope to do something before they have a cardiac event. So I decided to shift towards doing more community-based work, and this coincided with the Pride mentoring program. So Pride really helped me out speak the different languages that I was not familiar with and think at population health and community-based work in a very different way. So what I'm going to do is introduce the major study that is serving as the data source for Rachel's master's thesis, and then she'll take it on in talking about her particular methods and results. We have nothing to disclose. And we wanted to start acknowledging the large team that particularly Noe Crespo has put together at ASU, from which we're developing our project. So particular acknowledgments I wanted to give was to Dr. Crespo, who has been leading this project, to Meg Bruning, who has helped us a lot in looking at the home for food environment, to Frank Ray and Tony Tarango at the City of Phoenix Parks and Recreation Department. They are our community champions. And to Adrian Chavez, a doctoral student who has helped us a lot with the nutrition component of the project that I'm going to describe. So when Noe and I started talking about developing a program, we had in mind at the beginning focusing on childhood obesity. We know that a lot of kids who are obese during childhood grow to be obese teenagers and then continue to be obese adults. But as we kept talking about these issues and how to design an intervention to help with this problematic, we realized that lifestyle factors are very important, especially when you're talking about the prevention stages of potential treatment. Obviously, diet and physical activity work hand in hand, not only to help control weight status, but also to aid in fitness levels, and perhaps more importantly, with disease prevention strategies. So we decided to focus not so much on weight as a health outcome, but more on the actual behaviors, diet and physical activity, and hopefully provide programs that address both of those as a way to promote disease prevention. So the name of our program is Athletes for Life. This is a collaboration between the City of Phoenix Parks and Recreation Department, again, our community champions, Mountain Park Health Center, and the researchers at the School of Nutrition and Health Promotion at Arizona State University. There were a few things on top of the outcomes that I already mentioned that changed over time as we were planning this project. We originally planned it for it to be a project or an intervention program that would mainly work with kids, but we realized very early on in talking with our community partners and as we were doing formative research that we needed to incorporate whole families. So this is a program that's targeting families, both adults and their children. So the goals of this Athletes for Life program are to create sustainable community programs that provide physical activity opportunities and promote healthful eating for chronic disease prevention among children and families. When it comes to dietary outcomes, what we're more interested in is promoting an increase in fruit and vegetable intake and a reduction in sugar intake, two major components of the diet that need to be changed at the community level. So this program has developed in phases. During the summer and fall of 2012, we conducted a very extensive formative research phase. We're doing literature reviews. We were consulting with community partners to develop what became Athletes for Life 1, the first phase, that was basically a very short intervention program, 6 weeks in duration, to test the feasibility and acceptability of the program that we were proposing. Then, just this past spring, we completed Athletes for Life 2. So this is a proof of concept study. Basically, we conducted a little bit longer intervention, 10 weeks in duration. Again, providing a component for the children and a component for their parents on diet and physical activity. I want to clarify that by the time we submitted the abstract for this conference, we only had baseline data available, but now we have follow-up data as well from after the program. So Rachel is going to be talking about the effects of that intervention, because the data are a lot more interesting than just the baseline data alone. You'll see. She's excited about it. So to define Athletes for Life to the second phase, this was a 10-week community-based health promotion intervention. We used a quasi-experimental design, just measuring pre- and post-values. We targeted families with children between 6 and 11 years of age, and we actually recruited as participants dyads of one parent and one child within the same household, although parents and other children, other siblings, were invited to participate in the sessions if they wanted to do that. This was delivered at South Mountain Community Center. It's a community center in the heart of a low-income and very diverse population within the South Phoenix area. And again, data were collected at baseline and after 10 weeks. So as part of Athletes for Life, as part of the program, we have separate sessions for children and their parents. Children in this past spring session attended twice per week sessions, 90 minutes in length, and they were mainly provided with different ways of performing physical activity, so they were exposed to many different sports and skills to increase fitness. But they were also provided with a very short, no more than 10 minutes in duration, nutrition-based lesson at each session. And the purpose of that lesson was to give them a key message about nutrition that they could take home and then talk to their parents about. Oh, sugar in soda, as you can see in the picture, is not good. It has a lot of sugar. So just one key message that they could bring to their home. The parents participated in nutrition sessions. So those sessions, they were receiving 90 minutes per week of nutrition lessons. And they didn't only, those lessons didn't only focus on nutrition education, giving concepts about nutrition, but we also tried to promote behavioral strategies to achieve dietary improvement for the entire family. So as the dietary outcomes, we have a lot of physical activity outcomes as well, but I'm not going to focus on those today. As the primary outcomes that we have for diet are those related to the goals that we have for the program. So we're measuring, I'm very interested in looking at changes in fruit and vegetable intake and sugar intake. But we're also looking at other factors that could be determinants of intake. And among those, the one that we'll be talking about is the home food environment. And with that, I'll pass it on to Rachel.
Hello. This piece on the home food environment served as the research for my master's thesis, and I'm going to talk about why it's important that we would even focus on the home food environment at all. As we know, environment plays a large role in diet quality and overall health, and our environment, as we know, eliminating adverse agents within that at an early and common source is much more effective and efficient than relying on individuals to recognize those things themselves and avoid them. And it has been argued that the home food environment is the environmental factor with the largest influence on a child's eating. And for the purposes of this study, we have some definitions to go over. The home food environment, as we defined it, was dietary choices available within the kitchen of a home. And kitchen accessibility refers to items that are visible on countertops, on the top of the refrigerator, on tables within the kitchen. And refrigerator accessibility refers to when you open the refrigerator without having to move anything around, the items that are available and accessible at eyesight. And availability is referring to whether or not an item is present in the home. So again, the home food environment has a very localized impact on health and consequently, the choices that we're making and those influence our health. And in studies, we repeatedly see that availability relates to consumption. And when food items are easily accessible and obtainable, it increases the likelihood that they'll be eaten. For example, there was one study with new first-time mothers, and in their homes, when fruits and vegetables were available, it increased the likelihood that the mothers were eating them. And in another study that looked at family food environment and eating patterns among 5 to 6-year-old children, we see that not only does food availability in the home impact the food choices the children are making, but it's also shaping their food preferences as they're growing up. And so thus, I'll move that arrow out of the way. We wanted to test the preliminary efficacy, and I hate that word so much, of the Athletes for Life 2 program on the home food environment through presence of fruits and vegetables and sources of sugar in the household. Our data collection was completed at baseline and following the termination of the intervention, and participants filled out surveys to help us gather some socio-demographic information, and participants also consented to a home visit. And the home food inventory was the tool that we used during these home visits to help us capture the changes that were going on in the home food environment. And they focused on key food items found within the kitchen of the home, as well as cabinets that might have food in them, pantries, and if the participant had an additional refrigerator or freezer that was outside of the kitchen. And the home food inventory, the tool that I just mentioned, is a validated tool that has shown to be very promising for assessing community-based intervention programs as well as nutrition research and obesity prevention research. And for the purposes of this research, the tool was modified to focus on our main dietary outcomes, which were fruits, vegetables, and sugar-containing products. And we also added a dry breakfast cereal section, since cereal largely contributes to sugar consumption. And we also added some culturally relevant food items that we thought might be found in our samples, homes, including different fruits and vegetables, some candy, and some different beverage items. Overall, we entered 23 different households pre- and post-intervention. Inclusion criteria were just that participants have at least one child between the ages of 6 and 11 years old, and the parent participant be at least 18 years old. Exclusion criteria included if the participant had any dietary restrictions that made them follow a specific diet regimen. Of course, involvement in a different diet modification program at the same time of our program. Fruit and vegetable consumption greater than or equal to 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. Of course, if they were unable to attend the sessions on the given times and days. And pregnancy, but this didn't have much to do with or anything to do with the home food environment or the program. There was a sub-study going on in which blood was being drawn. 78% of our sample was Latino, and the household size on average was 2.4 adults and 2.7 children. And the level of education was high school, a high school equivalent or lower in 52% of parents. And in 61% of households, the income was less than $2,000 a month. And 39% of households reported to be receiving public food assistance. And of that percentage, more than half of those were participating in WIC. Okay, so now let's move on to the results. That's the fun part anyway. So all of our findings are going to be presented in this format. The gray bars represent data pre-intervention, and the green is representing after termination of the intervention program. And although we're seeing on this graph that there was an increase in the total number of different vegetable items present, it was not a significant increase after the intervention. But with the fruit, we did see a significant increase in the number of different fruits that were available in households. And this is nearly two different types of fruit that people were increasing in the home. And with the number of different sugar-containing products in the home, we saw a significant decrease in the number of sugar-sweetened beverages available in households. And these included drinks like regular soda, fruit-flavored juices, fruit juice, and sports drinks. We saw a significant decrease in the different candies that were available in households. These included things like chocolates, chewy candies, and gummy candies. And furthermore, we saw a significant decrease in the number of prepared desserts in households. These were things like cakes or brownies, pastries, and ice cream. And as I mentioned, we had added a dry breakfast cereal section, and we decided to categorize the cereal based on the Arizona WIC guidelines at the time of the intervention. And the WIC-approved cereals over there on the right were mostly high-fiber, low-sugar cereals. And although the reduction in the number of non-WIC-approved cereals was not significant, we did see a significant increase in the number of different WIC-approved cereals in these households. Okay, and this graph and then the next one that will follow are representing the number of households with each item being accessible in either the kitchen or the refrigerator. And here we see that flavored milk, both strawberry and chocolate flavors, were available in some households before the intervention. And at the termination of the program, nobody had these sugary flavored milks in the home, which was awesome. And we also see a very significant increase in the number of households with accessible bottled water. But we do live in Arizona, and as the intervention was trucking along, we're getting closer and closer to summer and triple degree heat. So we do think that there was an influence from the weather. People were starting to have water bottles in their homes. And then this last graph is, for me, the most exciting of the results. We see that there was a significant increase in both ready-to-eat fruits and vegetables that were accessible in the refrigerator. And what this means is, again, when you open the refrigerator without having to move anything around, there were cut up fruits and vegetables easily. Kids could grab them and take them out for a snack in clear containers or clear bags. And as I mentioned, the parents in the study had to have at least one child between 6 and 11 years old, and this is the age where food preferences are developing. Kids need to be exposed to nutritious food options, so this was really exciting to see. I talk about it all the time when somebody asks me what my thesis was on. I'm like, kids are eating more fruits and vegetables. Okay, this research had many strengths which I'll address, including the behavioral nature of the intervention, its focus on an underrepresented community within the Phoenix metropolitan area, and that two trained staff members were entering the homes and conducting these home visits. It wasn't self-reported data. And to acknowledge some of the limitations, we did have a small sample size, which was homogeneous, so it limits generalizability. Further, our research has a quasi-experimental design. And to speak to the home food inventory, while it does tell us what is in a home, it doesn't quantify for us. So while we may understand there were bananas and soda in a household, we don't know how many bananas there were or if it was only a can of soda versus a liter of soda. But in conclusion, the Athletes for Life 2 program resulted in favorable changes within the home food environment, including an increase in availability and accessibility of fruits and vegetables, and a decrease in sugar-containing products. And the home food inventory is a very promising tool for assessing intervention effects. However, there is a need to confirm these results in a randomized controlled trial. Looking forward, this research provided a better understanding of how feasible these open inventories are, where you're going into the home and the visits are being conducted by research staff. Participants were extremely receptive to the idea of doing the home visit, and it took much less time to complete the inventory than we had estimated at the beginning of the when we were developing everything. Existing health education programs could benefit from focusing on modifying the home food environment to promote healthier eating behaviors of families, and health behavior change interventions could utilize home visits as an additional measure to look at program efficacy. And these home visits really give a unique perspective and insight on participants outside the context of the program. You learn better about food choice, food preference, preferred method of food preparation and presentation. You learn about the different resources available in the home for food storage. It really sheds light on what's going on outside of them coming to a community center twice a week. And our perspective is really expanded and may lead to more relevant programs when we step into the home and we peek in the pantry. So did everybody hear the question all right? Okay. So to help limit some of that social desirability, I didn't help out with the actual intervention itself. I wasn't present. People weren't getting to know me too well and feeling like they had to impress me. So that was one measure that we took. But it is difficult. You know, when somebody's coming into your house, you want to be impressive. You don't want to have your junk food drawer. And there were some families who would, you know, mention, oh, it's so embarrassing. But then when I heard that, I thought, well, then they haven't taken some of these things out and hid them, so that's good. And there were some homes post-intervention where you could kind of tell there's things that have been here since the last visit that I'm noticing, things that they're not hiding and taking out. And with the ready-to-eat fruits and vegetables, that was something that was talked about a lot in the program, to have those things that your kids could grab out of the refrigerator. So that was exciting to see, but yes, there's still the limitation of the participants wanting to just impress you.
If I can add to that,
we're recording, so go ahead and use
sorry. So if I can add to that, one of the things that we heard from the kids is that their parents were making changes. So even if we were not able to measure that, some of the kids mentioned, yeah, my mom is no longer buying this, and now we have these other options. So a few of the kids were mentioning that there were actual changes going on in the household.
One more question? Any?
Okay, another round of applause.